This is Glow in the Dark Radio. The science fiction podcast with original independent science fiction written and performed by Mike Luoma, with music by Kevin MacLeod, The Vatican Assassin Trilogy, and The Adventures of Alibi Jones by Mike Luoma are available in ebook, trade paperback, and audiobook wherever you find your books online. Get links and details at glowinthedarkradio.com. This is the science fiction podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma, and I've got a couple of chapters, kind of, coming up on today's episode. It's another one of those cases where I have no idea what my younger writing self was thinking when it comes to the chapter breaks in this one. Chapter 20 is under 5 minutes long. It's only about 3 pages. And chapter 21, over a half hour. So what I'm going to do is divide chapter 21 into 2 parts, and I'll give you chapter 20 and chapter 21 part 1 on this episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. BC has just met with the Eldred again, and they explained that his presence on their world somehow triggered the release of one of the ancient enemy, who had been in suspended animation for over 1 million years. This dangerous individual, Dolome, is said by the Eldred to be heading for the solar system. And they've tasked BC, and by extension the human race, with tracking him down and killing him. So BC wants to speak to his counterpart in the Universal Islamic Nation, in the UIN, Al-Salid, who has also met with the Eldred. But that means going to Mars. The Pope really can't go to Mars, can he? We'll see in Chapter 20 and Chapter 21, Part 1, on this episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. I don't really have any book news for science fiction types, but if you're interested in the stone site stuff that I do, in the investigating of stone sites, I'm starting to do an audiobook of my latest book, which is Ancient Stone Mysteries of New England. And if you'd like, you can go to my Substack, and I'll put the link in the show notes for that, and you can listen to that audiobook. So there's that. But it's totally not science fiction, so you won't hear that on this podcast. This podcast, I want to thank my patrons for helping to support Glow in the Dark Radio, for keeping us going, and I might give my patrons some of this audiobook if they want it. We'll see. Because they're you know, paying to support this podcast anyway, helping to support my efforts. So if you're a patron, watch for that post. We'll see if patrons want it. If they do, then I'll do it. Speaking of patrons, I want to thank my patrons for supporting this podcast for all these years. And if you'd like to become a patron and help support Glow in the Dark Radio for $2 a month, $5 a month, or $10 a month, you can do that by going to patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio or by going to glowinthedarkradio.com and just clicking on the link to Patreon. Patreon's the site that collects your financial data and then dings you each month for the amount that you subscribe for, the amount you pledge. And you can, you know, support a whole bunch of different people. That's what I know a lot of people do. They go on Patreon and decide, well, I'm going to spend $25 a month on Patreon, and I'm going to support these 5 people for $5 each or something. So it works out pretty well. It's a, you know, it's not a perfect site, but it definitely serves a function. That is patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio if you would like to help support the podcast. And again, thank you to those of you who do. We're going to get into Chapter 20 and Chapter 21, Part 1, next on this episode of Glow in the Dark Radio.
Wake up, go to work. Work. Come home. Eat dinner. Rot your brain out. Go to bed. Lather, rinse, repeat. Are you tired of an old humdrum life? Tired of things that just weigh you down and depress you? Wouldn't you rather just focus on things that are awesome? Tune into Nutty Bites. Find out what's awesome. Nutty Bites. NIMLAS.org/blog.
Now here's Chapter 20, A Vatican Ambassador, on Glow in the Dark Radio.
There's no way in hell you are going to Mars, Anita says, trying to face down BC. Chris and Del flank her. The three are shaking their heads.
You know, you're officially crazy,
Chris tells him. I am going to Mars. I need to meet with Al Salid, especially now that he's met with the Eldred too. They wanted to talk to him about his religion, BC says, shaking his head. Think about it, he says to the scientists. For him, all of a sudden, these blue alien koala bears show up and say, come to our planet and tell us about your religion. I told him before he left that they're the ones killing us. I need to know how his meeting with them went and find out what he told them. I also want to make sure he knows we're on the same side now. Maybe we can pull ourselves together after all.
Right, says Krish. And then I'm going to walk on water, which will then turn into wine. How's that?
Krish, Anita admonishes him. Del suppresses a smile. I'm serious, BC tells them. I'm going to Mars, but it needs to be hush-hush. No one can know about this trip, especially the media. I don't want the Eldred to know about it either, BC says. But from what I learned on their homeworld, from what they told me, from the information they had, they seem to have some means of eavesdropping on us. They may find out anyway. This is going to be tricky, he tells them. I know that. I can't sneeze these days without it being on the newscasts. That's why I need the project's help. The project has the ships that can help me do this.
We appreciate your great faith in us, Del says. But you may be asking for the impossible with your demand for secrecy. We were much more adept at secret missions before you lifted our veil of secrecy.
Touché, BC says.
You're the Pope, BC,
Anita says to him, slowly and deliberately, as if explaining it to a toddler.
The fucking Pope!
Krish pipes up. Anita glares at him.
What?
Krish asks, defending himself.
I heard him say it himself.
You're a CEO and head of the UTZ Council. You're the most visible man in the human race, and you want to become invisible? She asks. Think about it, BC. It's insane. What about the UTZ Council? And what will they say about this back at the Vatican?
I'll let Wentworth know I'm going. He may even be able to help me get in and get out undetected. We'll see.
As for the Vatican, they'll think I'm still out here at the project, BC explains.
What? You want us to lie to your church?
What are we going to say when they ask for you, BC? She asks him.
They check in all the time. We won't be able to stall them.
You guys are scientists. Wentworth has robot doubles on his station. Can't you talk to his scientists and make me one of those? BC asks.
We could easily make a simulacrum that looked like you, Del tells him. But we couldn't program it to answer any real questions without a great deal of time and your involvement. The likeness would be the same, but the masquerade would be seen through easily with just some simple questioning.
Do it, PC tells them. Make it so, get it done, do what you've got to do, whatever. I want one. Even if it won't fool Rome. If it can walk and wave and smile, it can fool the media.
So, what about Rome, then? Anita asks him.
I'll go back there and tell him myself. I'll leave today. You get the Simuacha together and bring it to me at Vatican City. Then we'll send Simpope to Lunar Prime while I head out to Mars, BC says, planning on the spot. How long? He asks Del.
How long?
Until you've got a working model of me.
Oh.
Del closes his eyes, thinking. His eyes pop open.
About a week,
he tells him. Damn, BC says. I want to be on Mars in a day or two.
I'll do what I can to speed up the process. We'll need you to get scanned for the model as soon as possible, Del says.
Get it done, he says to Del. He turns to Anita. I need a transport back to Vatican City for me and the entourage. He turns back to Del. How long will the scan take?
About 20 minutes, he tells them.
Great. I need a transport in about an hour then, he says to Anita. And then I'll need you to help me figure my way from Rome to Mars and back again. The ships, the schedule, you know. Maybe you are crazy, she tells him.
Maybe the fucking Pope is fucking nuts, PC says flippantly.
I'm going to pack up. Or go tell my people to pack up.
Where should I meet you, Del? He asks.
At my lab. Do you know how to get there?
No, BC tells him. Have one of your assistants come and get me and lead me there, okay? Del nods. Let's get moving, he says, locking eyes with Anita's.
Man, if looks could maim.
He leaves her steaming, leaves Chris and Del exchanging looks of disbelief, and walks off to his apartments to get the ball rolling.
Chapter 21.
1 week later, BC is wondering where his head was at, especially now that his head's in a helmet and he's in a spacesuit bounding across the dusty red surface of Mars. Was this really a good idea, BC? Or did you just want to get away from the spotlight's glare? Well, you've gotten away, all right. Welcome to Mars. Welcome to the dust. The simulacra looked eerily like me. Hope it fools the news media. It's weird to see yourself like that, to be able to stand beside yourself, to be able to make a bad joke. I'm just beside myself. Now there's nothing beside me but dust. The dust. I remember Fiza telling me the dust was the worst thing about Mars. The dust is fucking everywhere. It gets into everything. I can hear her now. The fucking dust. BC plants one foot in front of the other, following the guidance array projected on the inside of his helmet's visor. Sand and dust flies through the air, whipped up by random winds. BC can't see the outpost he's making his way towards, but the glowing green heads-up helmet array tells him he's headed in the right direction. He can hear Cardinal Hardwick and Cardinal Terpa in his head as he goes over their conversation in Rome.
There is no way you are going to Mars, Cardinal Terpa tells BC. You're hardly ever here as it is. You're on the moon, or out at this new project we've just heard about. You can't go to Mars. It's too dangerous. And besides, you need an invitation, a request from them at the least, before you can go there. You can't just visit. You're the Pope.
That's why it needs to be a secret trip, BC tells her. I don't want it to be an official state trip. I want it to be hush-hush. Al Salid and I discussed this ahead of time.
We appreciate your unique approach to the papacy, Cardinal Hardwick says to BC. But this is well beyond the sphere of reasonable behavior for the pontiff.
Hardwick shakes his head in disapproval. These are unique times, Cardinal Hardwick, BC says, overruling him. An alien plague is killing us. An ancient alien killer is on the loose. Humanity, what's left of it, needs to band together. I need to see Al Salid in person, need to speak with him off the world stage, see where his head's at.
And I should see that soon enough.
BC slides down the side of a dune, careful not to trip over the rocks that break the surface of the sand near the bottom of the dune. The dunes are growing smaller, the sand underfoot more gravelly.
The terrain is changing. The outpost is just a click or two ahead. Wonder what the Japanese saw in this place. The UIN was kind of forced here, so they've got an excuse. But who would voluntarily choose to live here?
The helmet array blinks from green to red. A small hut just in front of him is outlined by red light on the glass of his helmet.
Good, the outpost. Where's the door?
Wind whips a cloud of dust at his helmet's faceplate as he walks around the outside of the hut. He waves it away, trying to see.
I thought they were terraforming Mars. All they've done is kick up the wind. You still need a suit to breathe out here.
BC finds the door to the small, airtight hut. He opens a panel in the door, revealing a row of green lights and a touchpad.
All green, still functional.
He opens the hut's door, steps into the airlock, and seals the door behind him. He finds the airlock controls and cycles the lock, filling the space with oxygen. The inner door opens and BC walks into the hut. BC double checks for atmosphere using the suit's sensors. He breaks the helmet seal and takes it off. He looks around. The hut is about 10 feet square, the size of a small stateroom, with a cot and a survival stack. Solar panels on the roof outside provide the power, keeping the hut's air reclamation system functioning. He breathes in the air.
Huh, a little stale. Not too bad, though. And this place is old.
BC tries brushing some of the dust off his suit before realizing it's futile. He laughs, again hearing Fiza echoing in his head, bitching about the dust.
At least I'm here. The project ship put me down where it was supposed to, about a click from here. It'll pick me up there in a week, all according to plan. This old Japanese outpost is about 20 clicks from the nearest and largest inhabited Mars colony, where Al-Salid is said to live. Would you look at this? Everything in here is coated with a fine layer of grainy red dust. No extra charge.
BC puts his helmet down, but doesn't bother to remove the suit.
I'll be needing it to make the 20-click trek to the UIN colony soon enough. Might as well keep it on. No need to get any of this dust inside the suit.
BC rummages through the survival stack and finds an energy bar, still sealed and apparently edible. He sits on the cot and eats.
Mars. Sand and shit.
The sun rises outside. Not the wide, warm disk of Earth, but the small, mean sun of Mars, casting a thin, bright light through the dusty haze. Sunlight seeps into the survival hut from outside, giving everything inside a soft red glow.
Might as well see if I can sleep the day away. I've got to wait for nightfall to make the trip to the UIN facility.
He lies down on the cot, still wearing the atmosphere suit. He tries best he can to relax and get comfortable.
Gotta love these pajamas.
BC somehow manages to drift off. He's half asleep when he feels something.
What, though? A presence? Who's there? Nothing. But I feel like someone's watching me, hovering over me. Or just nearby. Who's there? It felt like the last time. Not like Fortune Station, but like the last couple headache dreams. Can you hear me, whoever you are? Are you listening to my thoughts? Are you somehow here in my head? Who are you? I think I might know. Are you who I think you are? Who's there? No answer. The sensation is gone. Weird. I wonder.
BC falls fully asleep after the strange invasion into his thoughts. When he wakes up, it's dark outside.
Time to go to work. Ha! Feels like the old days, off on a mission. I guess I really do miss this. Miss the secret missions, the creeping around, the figuring things out, the thinking on your toes, the adrenaline rush of getting away. I don't miss dealing out death, though. Maybe I could restart the OPO, create my own little covert army, have my own little cadre of assassins. But then, I might have had to send someone else out on this mission. After all, this really is no place for the Pope of the NCC and Chief CEO of the UTZ to be. Huh, the OPO would make for way too many acronyms. Maybe I'm afraid of getting old and boring.
BC eats another energy bar and preps for his trek. He checks through his gear. He spreads out one map on the desk for a last look at his route from the Japanese outpost to the nearest UIN facility.
Got it.
He spreads out the map of the facility over the other one so he can take one last look over it. He's trying to commit the map to memory. BC closes his eyes.
I can see it in my head. Good.
BC rolls the maps up together and stows them away in the survival stack. He takes a look out the window and sees a dust devil twist by.
This is terraforming, huh? The nearest UIN facility is supposed to be an old hub from the Japanese terraforming operation, built up off the old Japanese terraforming facility. Location, I guess. Has something to do with it being near the North Pole. But if this is it, I'm not that impressed.
BC turns back to his gear.
Let's see, how's my anonymity?
BC checks over his suit one last time to be sure all distinct markings are gone. He has nothing on him that might give away his identity.
If anything was left on the outside of the suit, it would get sandblasted off.
Under the atmosphere suit, he wears a generic blue jumpsuit. There are no tags on any of his clothes. BC reattaches the oxygen converter and puts his helmet on. The red sealing indicator won't go off.
No seal? What is it?
BC takes the helmet off and examines the seal.
Dust. Fiza was right. The fucking dust.
BC uses his gloves to brush off the seal, and then puts his helmet back on. This time the seal is made and the indicator shines a happy green.
Finally. Time for the next step.
BC makes his way out of the outpost.
Mars at night. More dust, less light. Nice.
BC turns on his helmet light and his helmet's up front display, lighting the way in front of him and giving him the information on the inside of his visor. He starts to jog across the darkened Martian landscape. The terrain is rolling, sandy and dusty.
Dusty, of course.
Dunes gradually give way to jagged rock formations, jutting up out of the ground at random intervals. BC sees the planet's north pole,
rising up like a flattened cone off in the distance, across the sea of dusty sand and gravel dotted with gnarly bumps of rock and many mesas. He winds his way between the small rock formations and through the short canyons covering the 20 clicks to the UIN facility.
Scrunch, scrunch, scrunch.
BC hears each step echo inside his suit as he walks across the dusty gravel surface. He starts singing to himself in time with his footsteps.
Making my way across Mars today, singing a song, all I have to say. Don't got no rhythm, just some bad rhymes. Keeps me going while I'm killing time. 20 clicks. Not so far on Mars.
BC makes it to an emergency door at the outer limits of the UIN facility after about 2 hours of jogging through the Martian night.
Here's the emergency exit door, right where it's supposed to be. Nice.
BC can't see the rest of the facility from the door's vantage point, just the exterior of the emergency door's airlock.
There's a long tunnel connecting this exit to the facility. The rest of the place has got to be up ahead beyond those rocks. Hope these security codes I got from Wentworth are still good. Don't know how he gets his hands on these things. Probably don't want to know.
BC punches in the codes. The emergency door pops open. BC steps into the airlock and closes the door shut behind him. He activates the airlock's controls, feels the air pressure pushing in on him as the airlock fills. The inner door opens automatically when the pressure evens out. BC leans out of the airlock cautiously. He looks around the dimly lit tunnel end.
No one here. Good.
He walks into the tunnel, into the UIN facility. The airlock door seals shut behind him with a hiss.
Made it inside.
BC looks around the darkened tunnel.
This looks a lot like that small outpost. Similar architecture. Must be a part of the old Japanese facility. Very utilitarian. What's that sound?
A low humming sound hangs in the air.
The air system?
BC decides it is just the sound of the air reclamation exchange system, keeping the tunnel air circulating. There is dust on most every surface, but not as much as BC expected. The tunnel is fairly well swept and kept up. BC clips his helmet to his belt and begins to walk down the tunnel.
They use this tunnel, you can tell. Maybe even a regular way in and out. Now, even if it only used to be for emergencies. Feels lived in. People are in here every day. It's a good feeling, the way in.
BC stops and listens as he approaches the other end of the tunnel.
Let's hope that none of those people who use this tunnel are up at this hour. No real contacts here other than Al Salid himself, so I've got to penetrate right to the core on my first try. Someone's coming.
That was Chapter 21, Part 1, and Chapter 20, A Vatican Ambassador, on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Well, the Pope is on Mars. Maybe the fucking Pope is fucking nuts. That was in Chapter 20, as BC was talking about heading to Mars, and then, of course, he went. He is now on Mars and trying to get to see Al Salid. So we'll see how that goes in the second part of Chapter 21, Chapter 21, Part 2, coming up on our next episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. Once again, a big thank you to my patrons who helped to keep this whole thing going. And if you want to find out more about becoming a patron, or just look into this and say, what's the deal here? Just go to patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio. And you can check that out. I have 3 different levels of patrons at $2 a month, $5 a month, or $10 a month. And I appreciate your support. And that is all for this week. We will be back with that second part of Chapter 21 of Vatican Ambassador on our next episode. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.
Glow in the Dark Radio. 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 Radio.
This podcast presentation is copyright 2023 by Michael F. Luoma and is protected under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 4.0 International License, CC by NCND 4.0.
Music by Kevin MacLeod. You can find his work at Incompetech.com.
Mike's books are available in ebook, paperback, and audiobook, wherever you find books online. Get links and more details at glowinthedarkradio.com and mikeluoma.com. This has been a presentation of Glow in the Dark Radio.